inviting me. I'm very honored to be a part of this very special gathering on this very special night. Of course, tonight is Leil Hoshana Rabbah, the end of the Gemar Hadin period, starting with Rosh Hashanah through Yom Kippur. So it's a Chashuv night and a Chashuv group. All right, since you're all very esteemed alumni from Tamima High School, so we'll rack your brains and go back over some of your educational experiences. Starting with the incident of Avraham Avinu hosting his guests, I'd like to recreate the incident and see what we can remember from what exactly he did. I will start you off. Avraham Vayari Lav Hashem Ve'elunei Mamre. Avraham is sitting, appears before him Hashem as he is recovering from his bris milah. Vayisaeno Vayar. He looks up and he sees three people, Anashim are nitzavim, Allah are standing upon him. He runs to greet them, bows down before them. What happens next? Okay. Excellent. Pasuk Dalad, Yukachna Matmaim Verachatsu Raglechem. Has brings them water. Next. What's that? Okay, before he serves them, he asks them, right? First he invites them in. He says, I will go get them, get you bread that you should be able to feast upon. And they agree. They accept his invitation. Then what happens after he accepts his invitation? Okay, Vayimohir Avram Oel El Sara. He runs to Sarah and he tells her, Mahari Shalosa Ims Kemach Soilas Lushi Vasi, who go to make certain cakes that they should be able to eat. What else? Okay, everybody knows the Masiya. What else did he? Okay, he runs to the Bokar to take to Shech some animals to get meat and tongue. Of course, everyone knows that he feeds them tongue. Anything else? What does he do? What else goes on?
He talks to them. They start talking about
them. Okay, before that, up to that point. Just up to that point. Is that it? Yeah. Being comfortable, and that's all that he did?
Yes, he does here.
What then?
Yes,
he has Yishmol to get involved. That's correct as well. He took also chema v'cholov. He has his cream and milk. And that's basically it. So you guys are comfortable with the details of the story? Would you be comfortable if I told you that you may have left out the most significant part of this entire episode? Okay, so the Chazal have us tell us that, but that's not in the Pasuk. The Pasuk of this little episode concludes before they actually begin conversing, even before that. He takes the cream, the milk, and the calf which he had prepared for them. And he placed it before them. What's that?
They pretended.
What does it say in the Pasuk?
Meat and milk.
Okay, that's a problem which we're not going to deal with tonight. That's right. You have to deal with that. He has meat and he's got milk there. That's a separate issue. We're not going to deal with that. You're still missing the most important part. Are you on the edges of your seats here or what? So he takes all the stuff by Itain Lefnehem, Vuhu Omeid Aleihem Tachas Ha'etz, and he stood over them underneath the tree by Yochelu, and they ate. Did you catch the significance of that? He stood over them and they ate. Now, we're going to get to in a minute whether or not they actually ate or not, but the Pasuk says that they ate, which right away in your mind, wait, what do you mean they ate? We know that these are really Moachim. The Moachim don't eat. Okay, we'll get to that in a second. How significant is that? That he stood over them. Now, all of you remember the significant parts of this Mice of Chesed. Avraham Avinu, the Isha Chesed, runs out in the heat of the day, finds his guests, forces them into his house, runs to his wife, to his son, has everybody preparing the food, serves them the food, and there's a little detail, one phrase at the end, that Hu Omeid Aleihem Tachas Ha'etz. He stood over them while they ate. Now, why did none of you remember that important detail? It's a big deal. I mean, what did he do? Like, well, that's not an important part, right? Well, Chazal actually felt that this was pretty important. Chazal say as follows, the three miracles which followed Klal Yisrael throughout the 40 years in the Midbar. What are the three major miracles that followed us throughout the 40 years?
Man,
the air, and the Esh, or the Anon, the clouds, which basically was Yonah. All three of these miracles are traced back to this episode of Avraham and his guests. All three of them are rooted in the fact that Avraham did something for the guests, and therefore his generations, 400 years later, would merit something as a result of what he did. Says Chazal from the Tanit Verbi Shmuel in the Medrash. It's actually Gemara in Bava Metzia. Dischar shlosha zachu l'shlosha. As a merit for three things that Avraham did, his children would merit three things. Vischar chema v'chalav. As a reward for producing the cream and the milk and the food, what do you think his children got? The man, zachu l'man. Vischar v'kachna ma'at mayim, that he gave them water. What did his children merit? V'be'er. U'bischar v'hu omeid aleihem. And in the merit that he stood over the guests, zachu le'amud ha'anan. The Jewish people merit this cloud that protected them for 40 years in the desert. Now, we know that that was the most spiritual of all the three. The man and the be'er were their basic necessities, their food and their water. The anan is that which protected them. Chazal say if a person did any avera, the anan would physically sort of just like carry them, escort them out and kick them out. Poltenos, and just like you couldn't exist within this cloud of glory, this spiritual existence that was the anane hakavod, without being pure, without being ready and roi lekach. And what did we merit the anonym form? Because Avraham. So, what's the significance of that? That would seem to be the least significant. So insignificant, in fact, that none of you remembered he even did that. And that is what is the source. Now, as we're sitting here in a sukkah, what's the sukkah for? We don't have a yantah for the man. We don't have a yantah for the be'er. Even though Avraham's ma'isa chesed, his running to prepare food and give them water, merited that we would have water and food in the midbar. It's rooted and traced back to his ma'isa. But that didn't make its way into a yantah. What made its way into a yantah is the anane hakavod, and that's from the hu omeid aleihem. Well, what's the deal with that aspect of his chesed that becomes so significant? Okay, that'll be our question. Now, Chazal actually found a lot of fascinating aspects in this episode of Avraham feeding his guests. Now, number one was already mentioned, did they eat or not? Now, the pasuk says, "V'hu omeid aleihem vayochelu," that they ate. So there's a major machlokus in Chazal whether or not the malachim actually ate or not. The Gemara in Bava Metzia quotes an opinion that, of course, they didn't eat. Malachim can't eat. It was nearer. And it seemed as if they were eating. They sat down as a kavod to Avram and they took food, and somehow the food disappeared within them, but they didn't actually eat. Tosus quotes, the Medrashim quotes, other opinions in Chazal that the Malachim actually ate. They had food. As a kavod to Avram Avinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a nes that the Malachim actually ate. Okay, they ate, they didn't eat. What's so significant about whether or not the Malachim did eat or they didn't eat? So Chazal said they eat, they ate. Have another statement to say in that. Let's go back, fast forward a couple years to Kabbalah HaTorah. Moshe goes up to Har Sinai, 40 days, 40 nights to receive the Torah. Now Chazal understood that in that moment when Moshe was Allah El HaElokim, literally went up to Shemayim, there was this major battle between Moshe and the Malachim as to whether or not he was going to receive the Torah. The Malachim who set up in Shemayim, you're going to give the Torah to such a person, to a Basar V'dam, a person born of a human being, a person with all of his frailties. Keep the Torah in Shemayim, the Malachim argued. Now, many of you are probably familiar with the answer that the Gemara in Shabbos says to this. And what does Moshe say back to them? Right? Did you go down to Mitzrayim? Do you have parents? The Torah is not for you, it's for us. That's the Gemara, the Teretz the Gemara gives in Masechet Shabbos. We'll talk a little bit about exactly what that answer means. The Medrash has another answer. The Medrash has another approach as to... Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Let's read it inside. Exactly. Exactly like you're saying. The Medrash says... So remember, the battle here is between the Malachim and Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu is a champion of the Jewish people sent to receive the Torah and bring it down to us. And the Malachim are saying, absolutely not. Says the Medrash. The Malachim tried to harm him, tried to hurt him, to physically stop him from being able to take the Torah and bring it down to us. How did Hashem step in to protect Moshe from the Malachim trying to harm him? He turned the face, the image of Moshe, Doime LaAvraham. Turned Moshe's face so that it now appeared to the Malachim as if it was Avram Avinu standing in Shemayim. Amar Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Iyatem Misbaishim Heimenu? Are you not humiliated in front of him? This is Avraham Avinu. Aren't you embarrassed? Lo Zehu Shiradetem Etzlo V'Achaltem B'Soch Beso? Isn't he the one who you went down to and ate in his house? And therefore, they get the Torah? This is a battle in spiritual worlds in which the Malachim are saying the form of the Torah, the way that it's kept up in Shemayim, obviously where there aren't parents, there's no Mitzrayim, but the essence of Torah, which is up in Shemayim, the Malachim are saying it's ours, don't give it to them. And Hashem says, I have a winning argument. Let's change Moshe's face to look like Avraham, and now that it's Avraham, Malachim, aren't you humiliated? Aren't you embarrassed? This is the person who you went down. You ate in his house. Oh, so Malachim said, you're right. They for sure should get the Torah. We ate in his house. Yes. What kind of argument is that? Yet Chazal see that this Hu Omed Aleihem, somehow this episode of Avram standing over his guests, giving them to eat, merits the Anone HaKavod hundreds of years later in the Midbar. This same episode, Hu Omed Aleihem VaYochelu, that they had a miraculous event take place, that they should physically be able to eat, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses that against them to say, these people weren't and merit the Torah because you should be embarrassed. This is the person, you ate in his house. What's so significant about that? One last question. Chazal also found a fascinating change in the language. You know that whenever the Torah uses Lashona, so it's always very careful. In the beginning of the episode, the very first introduction we have to the Malachim, the Torah says that Avraham looks up, Vayisaena Vayar, Vihine Shlosha Anashim Nitzovim Olav. What does that phrase, Nitzovim Olav, mean? Standing over him. The way the Malachim are described are Avraham looks up. Now, he was talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam at the time. He looks up and he sees three malachim. Now, the Torah could have described this in any number of ways, that there are three people walking by. Which way does the Torah specifically choose to describe the relationship between Avram and the malachim? Avram's looking up and the malachim are standing over him. So Chazal were bothered, if that's the way the Torah describes the imagery, just a few psukim later, after Avram goes through this whole process and presents him food, then it says, Vayitain lefnehem, Vehu Omed Aleihem. And he, Avram, was standing over them. So Chazal was bothered by that. That why did the Torah choose to describe in the beginning of the episode the Malachim as Nitzavim Alav? They're standing over Avraham. And then a few psukim later it becomes Vehu Omed Aleihem. He's now standing over them. Say Chazal, what happened in between? Well, a very significant event happened in between. Before, they were Malachim, and he was just Avram. They're standing over him. Now, what's taken place is Avram has served them, presented them with food, and now he's standing over them. A maso mutelas aleim, says the Medrash. V'hu omed aleim, he's standing over them, and he instilled his fear into them. Michael Mirsos, Gavriel Mirsos, Michael the Malach Gavriel who were sent, were trembling. Mirsos is the language of fear, trembling, pachad, sitting and eating Avraham's food. What did Chazal see in this episode? That we now have Malachim eating the food of Avraham. Avraham standing over them, merits the Anane HaKavod for 40 years in the Midbar, merits the winning argument that Hashem can show the Malachim Avraham's face, and, oh, we ate at his house. For sure they should be entitled to the Torah. And that when they were sitting there eating of this food, there's a pachad. We don't describe Malachim as fearful, sent down to this world, dealing with an Avram. Why are they so afraid? They had a mission to fulfill. They were going to tell Avram he was going to have a child, they're going to destroy Sodom, they're going to heal him. All of a sudden they're eating his food, and they're frightful of it? Where's the pachad? Where's the mirsas that existed in this episode? All right, those are the questions on the episode. So I want to share with you the thoughts of my Rosh Yeshiva from Keren B'Yavne, Rabbi Chaim Yaakov Goldwicht, Zichut Tzadlik Levracha, his approach to understanding these questions, how it will relate to Sukkos, and how it will relate to the specific purpose of your gathering as far as your own personal growth, development, in terms of different ideas. Okay, you mentioned before, I asked whether or not the cake is healthy or not. So you said, well, it depends on your kavanas. So there's actually a very important role in kavana when it comes to things that we do in Yiddishkeit. If you went to a store and you wanted to buy a dining room table, so you see the table and you look at it and it looks pretty good, crafted well, quality, and you ask the owner and you say, tell me please, tell me about the quality of this table. So he says, well, sir, this is the finest quality table. The quality of the wood, it comes all the way from who knows where, the artisans who've worked on it. It's a magnificent piece. So you say, yes, yes, I see. Tell me about the quality of the table. So I look at you and say, well, the wood comes from such and such a place. It's made really well, and the artisans are very skilled, and you can look at the craftsmanship. It's a fine, fine table. So you know, but I'm really looking for the quality of the table. What was the artisan thinking when he made it? So he'll look at you a little askance, like, who cares? What difference does it make in the table what he was thinking about? Does it matter if he was thinking it was going to be used for a dining room, or for a kitchen, or for a living room, or for a fancy art show? Who cares? This is the table in front of you. This is the quality of its craftsmanship. You use it for whatever you want. What he was thinking, his intentions, if he was listening to the radio, if he was talking with a colleague, if he was thinking this is going to be a great table, just look at the table. That's the way that it works in the world. And if you think about or you care about what it was like, it doesn't make a difference. In Hashkafa, in Torah, in Mitzvot, it's not that way. There are many, many aspects of everything that we do where the kavana that you have actually will entirely impact whatever it is that you have in front of you. Classic example, Peret Tzitzis. The strings of Tzitzis have to be made lishma. They have to be twisted and woven lishma. And if somebody would buy a pair of string at Ace Hardware, take the yarn, make it into Tzitzis, it's simply not a pair of Tzitzis. It doesn't work. It doesn't count. It's meaningless. Because when the strings were spun, they weren't spun l'shem mitzvah tzitzis, and they can't be used as tzitzis. And there's nothing you can do about them. Those strings will be strings. They will live and die and be buried as strings, but they'll never be tzitzis because they weren't made l'shma. A person takes an animal, takes the skin of an animal, and makes the cloth l'shem sefer Torah. Now he's got a piece of parchment in front of him. That has kedusha sefer Torah. Can't then say, you know what, I'm not going to make a sefer Torah, I'll just give it to my kids to play with. It's also to do so. And whether or not you can use it for tefillin or for mezuzahs, which also have kedusha, is a discussion in halacha, how far we go. But that you can use it for divrei chol, you could just use it to write a letter, it's asur. The intention that you had when you made the skin into cloth establishes the cloth as a davar shebekedusha, and there are halachas that go together with that right now. It's lishma. And it's made, and there's a concept we have all the time. Why is a person doing something? There's a machlokas in the Mishnah as well. The night of sukkah has to be built lishma. We don't paskin that it does, but there are opinions in Chazal that if you made a sukkah, you had a sukkah, and you didn't build it l'shem mitzvah sukkah, it's not a sukkah. And your intention actually impacts your maisa. So in the secular world we live in, there's no such thing. It doesn't matter what your intention is. All that matters is, what did you produce? What's in front of you? In Dvarim Shel Ruchnius, it's not that way. Dvarim Shel Ruchnius, the machshava, the intention, the kavana that a person has, actually will impact the essence of what it is that's in front of us. So I'll bring you a fascinating example of this. There's a Gemara in Ksuvas. A bizarre Gemara. I'll use that phrase because all the Mefarshim, you have to ask this question. The Gemara says from Rabbi Chiya. Chiya, members of Chazal, says, Ona avdi deloy mishkachna Torah miYisrael. I have a method in which I can do something to make sure Torah will never be forgotten from Klal Yisrael. Never be forgotten. I can set up a process, put it into motion, we'll always have Torah. What am I going to do, says Rabbi Chiya? I am going to take a seed of flax. I'm going to plant it. I'm going to grow flax. Then I'm going to take that flax when it grows, and I'm going to make a net. Then I'm going to take that net, and I'm going to hunt myself a deer. I'm going to take the deer, slaughter it, feed the meat to Yesomim, take its skin, and make cloth, and make parchment. from that parchment, I'm going to write all the Sefer Bereishis on one piece, and all the Sefer Shmos on another piece, and Vayikra, and Bamidbar, and Devarim, and I'm going to teach each one to different children. One child is going to learn Bereishis, another child is going to learn Shmos, another child Vayikra, and Bamidbar, and Devarim. And then when each child has mastered his Sefer, they're going to teach the others. And then I'm going to do the same thing with Mishnah. I'm going to take the Shisha Sidre Mishnah, six pieces of cloth, and write down the Mishnahs, and one's going to learn one, they're all going to learn everything else, and from that, Torah will spread, will never be forgotten in Klal Yisrael. Ask the question that anybody who's ever learned that Gemara asks.
Why do you have to start with
that? Go to your local farm store, buy yourself a Sefer Bereishis. Do the same thing! Take your child, sit him down, you learn Bereishis. Here it is in front of you, great, let's step. Skip all those steps, all that time, all that labor, planting flax, making a net, hunting a deer, making cloth. Just go to your store, you buy it. Do the same thing, great plan, right? One guy learns one, he'll teach everybody else, now everybody knows. It's really a wonderful idea. Why in the world does Reb Chiya say, I'm going to start with a seed? Zok de Vilna Gaon, because if you're trying to create something significant, and Reb Chiya is saying, I'm creating a Torah d'loy mishkachna miYisrael, I'm not just teaching Torah, I'm teaching a Torah that will never be forgotten from Klal Yisrael, you can't start in the middle of the story. You can't just go into a store and buy Sefer Bereishis and think it's going to work. You have to plant a seed, says the Vilna Gaon, with the Kavana, I am making sure that Torah will exist forever in Klal Yisrael. And when you plant that seed with that Kavana, and you grow the flax with that Kavana, and you make a net with that Kavana, and you hunt a deer and make cloth, then you will taka have a Torah that will never be forgotten. But if you don't have a Kavana beforehand, the plan will never work, says the Vilna Gaon. It's impossible, because something so large requires a Kavana to match your Maisa. That, says the Vilna Gaon, is an example of how sometimes the intentions that a person has impact the outcome of what they're doing. And says the Vilna Gaon, that's what Rebbe Chiya is saying. If you really want such a significant outcome, every step of the way has to be done with something in mind. Now, one of the significant ways in which this idea manifests itself is in our midos, the way that we behave, our interpersonal relationships. There's a question which I field many times. I said this year over the first day of the Yontif, and someone came over to me and said, in their sukkah that previous afternoon, somebody had asked them the following question. We like to think that we have the Torah, so therefore we're the champions of Midas Tovos. We are always working on it. We have get-togethers such as this to work on ourselves. What other nation in the world has a group of girls such as this who get together monthly to work on themselves? Yet, you will hear this question, I hear it all the time, someone will come and say, I have this colleague in my office, a guy doesn't know a single thing about you, never saw a Jew before. The nicest person ever. So honest, so sweet, so sincere. Why do you think you need the Torah to become honest, to become true, to become sweet, to become nice? I see with my eyes, with my experiences, people are just fine without it. Now, people are not nice without it. People are not nice with it, too. So what's the deal? Why do we think we have to have a Torah in order to behave with Midas Tovos? What do we do with all of our non-Jewish colleagues who are unbelievable people? It's a question, I don't know if you've ever experienced it, if you've had it. I get it often, and it's taka kasha, but you'll not be surprised. The Rishonim already dealt with this question. Well before those who've had non-Jewish colleagues who are very nice people have asked this question. And it's an emes d'kakasha, and the emes is they're right. Non-Jews should be nice people, and they should be honest people. So Rashiv explained there are two types of nice people in the world. There is the type of nice person who is nice because they feel it's the right thing to do. They understand that society will be a better place with everybody behaving more appropriately towards each other. They have their approach is, you know, it's just, we'll all be better off. If I do it nice to you, you'll be nice to me. I can let my kids walk to school. I don't have to worry about somebody doing anything to them. It's just a nice way for the world to be. And there are others who might even think within that approach that a person has to be nice. They understand that it's just appropriate inherently that a person should be a good and true person. And you see that they're correct. Any human being should be able to come to the conclusion that they need to be honest, correct, and nice. What's a raya from Sefer Bereishis, where you see that even without the Torah, the Ribbono Shel Olam expects us to be kind, correct, honest people? From what? From Noach and from? From Stone. We see throughout Sefer Bereishis, generations, entire cities, without the Torah, who were inappropriate, not kind to each other, mean, stealing people, are wiped out. They didn't need a Torah to know that they weren't supposed to behave that way. It was expected of them. The Ribbono Shel'Olam created a human being and expects them to be appropriate. The Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon in his Hakdama to his Sefer HaMafteach writes, Ki kol ha-mitzvah she'in tluyin b'svara, any mitzvah which is contingent upon just thinking about it and understanding this is the right way to behave, kvar hakol mischayovin bohen min hayoim asher bora elokim odom al ha'aretz. Every single person is mischayev in them from the day the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world. So I can steal, I can cheat, I can be dishonest. There's no such thing. A human being created, a person has to know and understand that it's appropriate behavior to be correct, to be moral, to be ethical. So then what did the Torah add? So if every human being that ever was created is expected to come to the conclusion that they're supposed to be correctly behaved, what does the Torah add? So the Gemara says as follows, Omer Rabbi Chama v'Rabbi Chanina, this is the Gemara in Sota. What's the meaning of the pasuk in Devarim, Acharei Hashem Elokeichem Teilechu? You must literally walk, follow after Hashem Elokeichem. The Gemara asks, V'chi efshalo lo'odam lahalech achar shechina? What do you mean, Acharei Hashem Elokeichem Teilechu? You can't walk after. Like a person walking in front of you, and you could just say, oh, there he goes, let me follow after him. What does the pasuk mean to follow after Hashem? Say Chazal, Hashem Elokeichem is an Eish Oichlohu. You can't follow that. Elo, what does it mean, halach? Means halach achar midos of Shalom HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have to follow after his midos. Mahu malbish arumim, just like he clothes the naked, afata halbish arumim. You're required to do so. Mahu HaKadosh Baruch Hu biker cholim, just like he is mevaker cholim, afata biker cholim. You have to be responsible for visiting the sick. Mahu afatu, as he is, you have to be. In the words of the Rambam, v'halachta v'drachav, he quotes a different pasuk to follow in his ways. Mahu nikra chanun, as he is called a chanun, as we don't know the essence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, we can just call him as displaying the midah of chanina, of graciousness. Af ata hayei chanun, you have to be the midah of chanun. Mahu nikra rachum, as we call him merciful. Chayev ata you have to be rachum. Chayev adam lahanhig atzmo bohen ulihidamos elav kefikochon. The immortal words of the Rambam. You have to be noyheg like the Ribbono Shel Olam ulihidamos elav kefikochon, to become similar to him according to your ability. Dr. Rosh Hashiva, the chiddush of the Torah is not just that you are behaving correctly, you always have to behave correctly. You have to do so with a kavana of becoming godly. I am doime mamish, literally similar in my behavior to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Ribbono Shel Olam is nikra chanun. When I act as the midah of chanun, not because the world is going to be a better place, not because I want others to do it for me, not because I want things to be that way or I feel that they should be. When I act in this way, I might be doing the same thing as a neighbor of mine, but I'm doing it not because I think it should be done or I've come to that conclusion, which is a correct conclusion. I'm doing it because I'm becoming like the Ribbono Shel Olam. When I do X, Y, or Z, that which I'm doing is literally pshuto kimashmo, being doime to the melech malchei melechim. I am behaving as a human being exactly as the Ribbono Shel Olam, becoming similar, comparable to him. And that's the chiddush of the Torah in Midos, which was existed way before. Midos Tov has existed before the Torah was given. But the added element of the shma, the kavana, in which you can entirely change an action. Somebody can do an action that could be a nice and honest person. And why are you doing that? Because the person should be nice and honest. The Jew has the responsibility of doing that same thing and knowing and understanding and doing with the Kavana, I'm becoming like the Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm becoming godly. I'm changing a human being into something entirely different, something that's similar to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now, when a person does that and they use Kavana, the Lashma, to change the action, the two types of chesed, the person who does a chesed because they think it's the right thing to do, and they think everybody should be that way, versus a person who thinks he's being godly, that he's becoming doima to the Ribbono Shel Olam, mamish, will manifest itself in a couple of different ways. This is what's most relevant to us. So one of the ways it will manifest itself in is if your attempted act of chesed doesn't quite work out. Somebody needs a favor, and they call you. So they're speaking to a bunch of girls who are post-high school graduates. Someone needs babysitting. So they call you at 10 o'clock at night. Something kind of, I don't know, babysitting. Not babysit. You're busy doing other things. Maybe you do like it. But tonight, you're not interested. You're not interested in doing it. Fine, I'll go out, get myself together, get dressed, go out. Right as you're about to leave the door, you get a phone call from the person who called you, and they say, never mind, my neighbor just saw me running around outside. They said they can cover it. I'm all good. Don't worry about it. Thanks for the offer. What's your reaction when you get that phone call? Right? So I'm like, phew, schmack, Baruch Hashem, I was tested, I passed, I accepted, now my reward is I don't even have to go do it. It's even better. The Rebbe Shlomo is taking care of me, that I get the schar for doing it because I was ready to, I don't have to do it. So that's an approach of a person somebody needs help, so I'd like to help them. But if my kavana is, I want to become godly, I have to be doymet to the Rebbe Shlomo, and here's an opportunity for me to do it. When I carry this out, I am acting mamish like the Rebbe Shlomo, becoming a little bit closer, taking the animal side of me and pushing it down, and becoming like the Rebbe Shlomo, and then you take that away from me, I'm deflated. I'm disappointed. I had this opportunity. Someone calls to host somebody for Shabbos, and all of you know more than I know how much of a tircha it is to host people for Shabbos. It's upsetting. It is a physical toil to host guests for Shabbos. You have to get the room ready, and the food, and the little basket, and those of you who really know, you have there's like a whole thing that goes into hosting somebody, making them feel really warm, welcome in your home. It is physically, it's a toil. So you have an opportunity to do it. And great, I'm going to have this opportunity to be able to do so. And then they call us and never mind, you know, their plane came in late and they tell you ready on Thursday night before you did it. Now, it's one thing if you already went through all that and then they cancel. But before you did it. But you know, you're going to have to still do it. And they cancel. There's a human sense of, phew, that saves me an hour. I have other things to do. So there's an element of, I can't believe that was just taken away from me. This disappointment of, I was about to be able to be like Avraham Avinu, to be like Avram, the Isha Chesed, to bring people into my home. Yes, to physically toil over it, to prepare, and now I don't have that opportunity, and that's disappointing. And you see that from Avraham Avinu. What's Avraham? What does Rashi quote from Avraham as he's sitting in his tent 3 days after his Bris Milah, suffering in pain, and the Rebbeinu Shlom does a Mechesed and takes the sun out so that it's shmoiling outside and no one's passing by. And what's Avraham's response? He's mitzta'er, Rashi says. Hashem looks down at Avram, the ro'osh mitzta'er. He was pained that there weren't any guests. That's the difference between like Avram and the rest of us. In the sense of, even if we would have woken up that morning, and we're in pain, and we're suffering, and we still want to do something, but if the opportunity didn't present itself, we'd at least feel the relief. Oh, it's not here. Nothing for me to do. Everything is good. No one needs my help. If no one needs my help, the world's already a good place. Everything is fine. Avram took that to a different level in that he was mitzta'er over it. It bothered him that he wasn't able to give. He wasn't able to do. He wasn't able to become closer in dimyon to the Ribbono Shel'olam, where he would go to sleep that night and say, I am now closer in behavior to the Ribbono Shel'olam than I was before. Looking at me now, you'd see me a little bit more almost godly-like than I did when I woke up this morning, and I was looking for that opportunity all day long, and it never came. And that's disappointing, and he was mitzta'er over that. So the Rebbeinu Shlom sends him his guests because of the pain that he felt about it. Another way that it manifests itself is in the preparation, the actual efforts that we go through in preparing for it. Whether or not, I don't have like a great example for this, but sometimes where there's an opportunity to do something, you can write it off very easily. Easy things like with a checkbook versus, you know, sometimes you have somebody needs a meal. That's a good example. See, I don't know if it will exactly play itself out. Someone has a baby, you're making meals, you put yourself on the list. So, fine. They need a meal, you're going to do that. So there's a way to do that in which you say, no problem. I'm going to call Chai Peking. I'm going to have an order a meal, and I'll write out, you know, the $25 check, and they'll deliver it, and I prepare dinner. And from the perspective of chesed, of somebody had a need, and I have taken care of that need, the job is done, right? And there's no question that's a ma'aseh chesed. I don't mean to take away from anyone who does that. You took care of them. there's an element when you see that there's more than just my taking, that they're taking care of. That's part of it. Somebody has a need, they need. But there's another element that I need to grow from. That I need to become like the Ribono Shel Olam. There's an aspect of the being involved in it, the physically taking myself, my kohos, my time, my resources, making the meal. The way that I make that meal is entirely... I'm just going to write out a check and make sure... Yes, that's the chesed. No question about it. They have a need. They need a meal. You provided it for them. But there's another element. When you do it, you're changing yourself. Because we know it's not easy. It's toiling. I got to work. I got to prepare. But you know what? We all know that it's different as the recipient also when I receive a home-cooked meal than when I get one from Chai Peking. So there's something about that effort that goes in, which also is a person who's not just doing it because there's a need out there and there's a chesed, I want to be a nice person. There's more than that. I want to become somebody different through my chesed. It's also done. I'll share with you the Rosh Hashiva's approach in a fascinating medrash. The medrash says, Ve'ezes chus zachul yishol shenitel hemon ba'midbar. Same approach of Chazal that tie it back to Avram. Listen to how Chazal see which aspect of Avram did they get the man. Now what do we say? Where did they get the man from? He served them. Listen to the pasuk Chazal chose to tie in the serving of them to getting the man. Shene'emar lushi va'asi ugot. What is that pasuk from? He's talking to Sarah, saying, go prepare the meal for them. The Torah, the Medrash doesn't quote, and he placed before them food, and therefore we got the man. The Torah, the Medrash quotes Avram telling Sarah, let's go make them a meal. And from the pasuk of him telling them, let's put in the effort in the hachana, it was from that Chazal see, oh, his children are going to get the man years later. But the hachana, more than actually putting the food down in front of them, is where Chazal saw that in terms of what goes into, because where do we as people change more as far as the growth? Not from the fact that I put the food down, but from that all that went into from my end being able to do it. One other nafkamina that comes out, whether or not where a person's chesed is coming from, is it coming from becoming doymet to the Ribono Shel Olam because he wants to do a chesed, is in the attitude that you have when you're going through the ma'aseh of chesed. And we, as recipients, always can tell from the body language, from the attitude. It's just so obvious when we're dealing with somebody, when we are unfortunately on the receiving end of somebody's chesed. We're guests in somebody's house for Shabbos, for a simcha, or we're receiving meals, or we're being visited. You can always, always, always tell how excited the person is to be doing whatever that they're doing. You just can't hide that. And what a difference it makes to us as recipients when we know that the person who's there really wants to be doing this for us. They're not just hosting you because they had an extra room and the person making the bar mitzvah called them on Thursday night. Like, they're excited to have somebody in their house. What shows that? How do you see that? How do you create that? The who omed aleihem tachaseit. I stood over them. What do you guys need? I'm here for you. I have nothing else to do other than stand over a couple of people passing by, just watching them eat. You're not a burden. You're not taking up my time. I'm happy to be here. What can I get for you? You need more tongue. You need more mustard. You need more food. You need more water. What? I'm just happy to be here. And there is no way to compare as recipients what we get when somebody's got that attitude that this is not a burden for them. They're excited to do it. They're happy to do it. And what it does for us as people, when we're able to do that, when we're able to give and create that in a way in which it's just joyous, what needs a closer to the Ribono Shel Olam is that? It's not a burden for me. I don't do this because I have to. I don't need a mitzvah note tomorrow morning from school. I'm doing this because this is the Ribono Shel Olam. And I'm becoming like the Ribono Shel Olam. And the simcha, the emes. I'm so excited to be able to have this opportunity to help you. There is no greater way to get that phone call. I always like giving this example when I speak to guys in yeshiva about chesed. Someone gets a call at 2:00 in the morning, they got stranded at the airport. You pick me up. Do you know anybody who would turn over and say no and hang up on that person? Do you know anybody who would do that? I can't even think of a person at 2:00 in the morning who would say no. How do you get that call? Put yourself in the person in the car, 2 o'clock in the morning, got in from a late flight, and your car breaks down. And you're sitting with your cell phone, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you're scared out of your mind. Who do you call? If you don't have your parents' arms, who do you call? As you go through in your mind, what are you thinking about? Which friend is going to be happy to receive this phone call? Who's not going to be, all right, grumpy, mumbling under their breath, upset, like, who's not going to be making fun of me? All, like, that's what you're thinking. Who is the most logical candidate to get the phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning is the person who you know wants to be woken up at 2 o'clock in the morning to do a chesed like that. How do you establish yourself as that person to be woken up at 2 o'clock in the morning? If anybody who gets the call at 2 o'clock would do it, how do you earn the zchus to be the person to get the call at 2 o'clock in the morning? Because when you do the simple favor of picking up the cleaners for somebody, or picking them up on the road when they're looking for a ride, or offering to babysit, or make a meal, you're the person who does it with an attitude of who omid aleihem tachas eitz. The person who does it with an attitude of this is a joy for me, this is a pleasure, I'm becoming like the Ribbono Shel Olam. You're doing me a favor that I'm becoming closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam, mamish, kipshuto kimashmo. I'm more like him because of what you're presenting with. When you have that attitude, you're the person that they call. You're the person they ask to host the next meal, because when the guest says, I can't believe you put us up there, they were so pleasant, it was so nice to be in their house for Shabbos. When you present that, you'll get the next call, because that's what you are. That's what you do. It's a joy. It's a pleasure. It's not a burden. I don't want to have to call them again, because, you know, remember last time, it felt... That's how you become the person to get the phone call. That's how you become the person to get the call at 2 o'clock in the morning, to get the one to host the guest, to make the meals, because it's a pleasure. It's an attitude of who omir leim tachas eitz. When the malachim come down from Shemayim, and they're sent to Avram Avinu, and Avram Avinu is omid aleihem, as he stands over them, Chazal say they become filled with fright. What are they frightened over? Because they're seeing an image of the Ribbono Shel Olam ba'olam hazeh. The malachim, malachi ha-shamayim, the malachim elokim, up in Shemayim, they come down, see a human being, and after serving them, forcing them into their home, he then stands over them to serve them. The midah of Avram, that who omid aleihem, fills them with mirsas. It's a pachad. This here, a person like this, in this world of human beings, full of their taiva, their desire for kavod, kina, yetzahar, and this, an image of the Ribbono Shel Olam mamishir, fills them with fright. The Ribbono Shel Olam says to the Malachim in Shemayim, you think you're going to keep the Torah up in Shemayim? My children down there are going to get it. And you know how I know they're going to get it? I'm going to show you the face of Avraham Avinu and say, isn't this the one that you ate in front of? Isn't this the one who became like me down there? So you think the Torah has to stay in its ruchniistic form, in its form that the Malachim would study. Malachim who don't have parents, who didn't go down to Mitzrayim, who don't have a door to put a mezuzah on, but they studied the Torah in its form of ruchnis, which was up in Shemayim. And the Baruch says, we're going to create that down there. We're going to take that Torah, give it to human beings, and they're going to become like me while they're still there. Mamish. And that's an argument that the Ribbono Shel Olam can make to the Malachim. There's no response to that. He has to be able to give it to them, because that's what the Torah is about. That's what it's for. The Anonei HaKavod of Sukkos are because of the Hu Omid Aleihem Tachas Eitz. When Klal Yisrael sin with the Egel HaZahav, what do we lose? We lose the Torah, and then what happens to the Anonei HaKavod? We lose it. Did Hashem take away the man? Did he take away the be'er of mayim? Only the anan. Why only the anan? Because our food and our water, we deserve food and water, we need food and water. But the anan ha'kavod is different. Who deserves, who merits to be in the anan ha'kavod? The anan ha'kavod represents the who omid aleihem tachas ha'etz, the need of being doma to the Ribbono Shel Olam. When Klal Yisrael merits to be doma to the Ribbono Shel Olam, the anan ha'kavod are there. But when we fall, the only thing we lose is the Ananya, because how could you be in the Ananya Kavod if you're not on such a level? But you can't be. So only the Ananya Kavod we lose, because the Ananya Kavod represent the godliness of the Jewish people, the Kavod that they have to have. This is the mikvah called for the fourth time in a row. I have to stop. I was going to stop it. Anyway.